As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Greetings and welcome to Starkville.
Baseball Hall of Famer Jason Stark.
And then the robot said, strike.
That's why you're going in the Hall of Fame.
It's an inside the park home run, Doug Glanville.
Mike Trout is coffee at Starbucks with a double latte, skinny.
Doug, are you ready to make some podcast magic?
I am ready. Bring on the magic wand. Let's do it.
Greetings and welcome to Starkville, now part of the Athletic Baseball Show, where you'll find great baseball talk all week long, all off-season long, and even all lockout long. I'm Jason Stark. I write about baseball for The Athletic. And for the first time in 2022, I am joined by my good friend, writer, broadcaster, professor, Emmy winner, and distinguished former major leaguer, Doug Glanville. So, Doug, how are you, my friend? How is 2022 treating you?
Yeah, Jay, good to see you, man. Fresh starts. A little snow on the ground here in Connecticut. So I did my obligatory shoveling slash snow blowing.
Been there.
Far from baseball in that regard, but we will always keep us close to baseball. So that's the good news.
Right. You know, as I was shoveling snow for an hour the other day, Doug, I thought to myself, it's time for this lockout to end because we need pitchers and catchers. More on that in a moment because, you know, I think I need to add yet one more title to your intro, Doug, which pretty soon is going to be longer than the actual show. You are now the Sunday Night Baseball Color Man alongside our good friend, John Boog Sciambi on ESPN Radio. So congratulations. Tell us about this.
Yeah. Well, Jay, it was kind of, it seemed somewhat out of nowhere, but you know, I've done a lot of games over the years. I was on the Wednesday night team for a while with Sciambi and Rick Sutcliffe and did some sprinklings of games on radio here and there. And, you know, sort of was it was one of those moments where everything started to line up. And I was set to kind of do my Baseball Tonight studio. I live close to the studio. So I was always a sort of breaking news guy and I was good with that. And I was writing periodically. And then all of a sudden, it started kicking around this idea that, hey, you know, maybe you could do some radio and let's see how this unfolds. So it got traction and then it was, you know, really serious. And I thought about like the opportunity, first of all, to get back into the event space more consistently. Right. And of course, working with John is a no-brainer. I've worked with him forever. And so, yeah, it just kind of materialized from there. And then as we did, we kind of figured out a way to make it happen. So, you know, they kind of put the announcement out. And so, yeah, I'm excited. I'm just, first of all, the more I can talk, it's better. It's like the podcast. Right? So I'm like, yeah, I can talk more. Yes. So I love the idea of telling stories and doing it attached to real time, you know, the game in the action. So, yeah, it's exciting.
Well, you guys will be so much fun to listen to. And also, you needed another job. So I'm glad you'll have something to do now every Sunday. Hey, Doug, elsewhere in our world, everybody knows this by now, The Athletic came to an agreement last week to be purchased by the New York Times. And people have been asking me lots of questions about what that means. I'll admit I asked some of those questions myself. I wanted to pass along the answer to the biggest question. The Athletic's going to be operated separately. So honestly, if you listen to this, if you read us, nothing will change. We tell stories about sports. We're going to continue to tell stories about sports. Nobody tells those stories better. And that's why the Times wanted to buy us in the first place. They must think we're doing something right because they're paying more for our site than Bruce Springsteen just got for his entire iconic music collection. So does this mean that the Weird and Wild column is now officially more valuable than Thunder Road? What do you think, Doug?
Absolutely. The boss is more like the assistant boss. We are, that puts us in boss category. And being from New Jersey, I have a great appreciation for that. So yeah, that's all right, boss. You can call us. We'll sing on your next album, bring you up a level.
Okay. I don't think that was part of the deal, but I'll let you know if I hear anything. This week on Starkville, Doug, we have a tremendous guest. It's Hall of Fame election season, so Charlie Manuel will join us to talk about the Hall of Fame credentials of Jimmy Rollins and some other members of the Phillies team of his that won the World Series in 2008. You know, if you don't count teams from the last 10 years, that team has a chance to be the only team in history to go to back-to-back World Series and win one of them and possibly not have a single Hall of Famer. We'll talk more about that with Charlie. Also, later in the show, we will rank the weirdest injuries of 2021. Some great contenders. Doug has an epic injury story of his own. But first, I think we should get into the state of baseball. You know, it's 5 weeks from what should be pitchers and catchers, spring training, palm trees swaying in the breeze, all that stuff. But Doug, the lockout began 40 days ago. You know how many of those days these two sides have spent talking about the central issues that have gotten them and us into this lockout mess? You know the answer, right? It's none. Not yeah. One. And Doug, you were player rep once for the union back in another time, another contentious labor time. So what do you think we should make of that? I know what I make of it. I know what our guy, Evan Drellick, who covers this for The Athletic, makes of it. Curious what you think.
You know, I always think back to a conversation I had with Gene Orza recently, and I might have mentioned it a couple of shows ago as we got into the lockout. But, you know, he mentions that the timeline in these negotiations are exercises in authenticity. And he talks about that in how this will expose what is really important to both sides. And the idea that time is sort of the thing that's working to put the pressure on. And the further you go, closer to spring training, the regular season, the more you're going to kind of really bring to the forefront what's the absolute top priorities. So I do think there's somewhat of a strategy to that. You know, it's, of course, highly stressful. And to keep, when you're a player, there's so many players you have to keep in the communication loop to be on the same page as opposed to whatever, you know, 30X owners, right? You have an ability to, you get a lot of, you know, dissolving of information when you have so many people to sort of remind that you're on the same page. I think the issues are always, you know, similar, the economics of it. One thing that's really clear to me is that we used to look at the sort of salaries of players in these sort of 10% groupings. I think they're technically called deciles, if I have it right, but 10%. So you think about the highest paid and the rookies and so on coming up, and you wanted to make sure, your goal was to try to make sure every group would grow. And so there was no like top heavy or bottom heavy. You wanted to make sure. A big concern is just the younger players that are getting established and becoming stars early, Tatis Jr. and so on, their ability to command the dollars at that early stage. Is difficult, you know, and so, yeah, you can sign these long-term deals, of course, if you're incredibly, you know, like a Tatis Jr., but really, when you look at arbitration and getting to that three-year mark, that's the watershed moment. That's the moment you're associating with, okay, I can kind of get into the payday. So I think the money and trying to figure out these young players that are producing at this high level early on that are generally cheaper. And also the sort of counterbalance to, all right, do we try to get these top draft picks? Another way to acquire talent is by these drafts. And all of a sudden, our, you know, tanking becomes this big question. And how do you prevent that and try to give incentives to pay players commensurate to their production and where they are and the ability to retain those players? So, you know, a lot of it is familiar. I don't see like this big giant gap, but I do think that it's going to be contentious. And, you know, unfortunately, as time keeps going by, you get less surprised that this may jeopardize the start of spring training at the very least.
Doug, I just want to double back to something that you talked about at the start of your analysis. You know, last time we talked about this, I mentioned I spent way too much of my life covering the strike in 1994 and 1995. And I know because of that it can be totally overrated whether the two sides are formally meeting or not. A lot can be accomplished when they're not meeting, and maybe more, in fact, if there's constructive dialogue going on behind the scenes. But I don't think that's what we're seeing here. Unless the people that I'm talking to are misleading me, and I'm pretty sure they're not, both sides are mostly just biding their time until there's more pressure to make a deal. I mean, you mentioned this. So here's my question to you. When do you think they feel that pressure? I honestly would be surprised right now if they feel it any time before February. What is your pressure point date or time frame? Is it first day of spring training or sometime before then?
I think it is right around the beginning of spring training when everybody's supposed to report. Maybe even a little later than that, because, you know, I remember our strike year going in and having like, you know, 8 games. You know, it wasn't great, but we pulled it off and got people ready for the season. So, but the real pressure point from the player standpoint is the fact that if you're a free agent and you weren't in this like, you know, billion-dollar class that just happened, now you're kind of, you know, Michael Confortos of the world or whatever. Now all of a sudden you're going to be jam-packed at the back end trying to get these contracts. And I think that's what starts to create a lot of pressure. I'm sure the owners are well aware of that. And it's the free agent signings coming through and then this mad scramble. So yeah, if you pull that off in February, you're in better shape, but you're looking at March 15th. You know, now it's like chaos. And then, you know, you could be Craig Kimbrell, right, who, you know, didn't find the contract he wanted. And it definitely affected his performance for a while. So that's to me I'd put something in like early March as that, like, okay, you know, players are going to be like, all right, what's going on here? And, you know, because once you get into games and it just starts to become diminishing returns for a while when people are like, fine, we'll just forget the games. And, yeah, of course, that would be a disaster. But, you know, baseball negotiations have always, you know, are often led into disaster and been kind of unafraid to do it. So we'll see if that works this time.
Yeah. You know, as I look at these issues, there's a deal out there to be made. Mm-hmm. And unlike in previous major work stoppages, I honestly don't see any single issue or even a combination that would be so monstrous that it would be worth canceling games or missing paychecks over. So, like right now, I would still bet that opening day takes place as scheduled on March 31st. But would I bet your beach house on it? I don't have a beach house, so I'd have to bet yours. Would I bet your beach house on it? I would not. I might take the over. What about you?
I mean, I think we're going to be in trouble come time March. You know, I don't know the drop dead. I just see, you know, all these years that there's been quote unquote labor peace. I'm sure the owners have to be curious, like, how much resolve do these guys have? There's a whole generation. You know, we're talking about, you know, Charlie Manuel coming on. Chase Utley had a whole career, really, without a labor stoppage, right? I mean, he came up in, like, 04, and I guess that was, you know, around the time where it was just, like, whatever, labor peace. So, I don't, you do wonder, like, I mean, they haven't been successful every time they've tested the players in this regard, but it's a whole different generation. So if you go all the way to the mat, why wouldn't you just see? I know it seems like business, you know, disaster, but I don't know. I do think that these issues and the economics and bringing baseball to a level where the owners see this more closely related to football or basketball, it probably takes that. And I think the players are ready. Their negotiating team is full of superstars, which is really a kind of an incredible thing. They have a lot of top flight players that have made money or are making money, and they're still on the mat fighting for all the constituents of the union. So, I think it's going to be really interesting, but I don't see it as being like, okay, hey, kumbaya, we're all good, let's just sign. I think it's going to be pretty contentious.
Oh, it'll get messy. That's one thing you can safely predict. It will get messy. Doug, it's time to welcome in a guy making his very first visit to Starkville. And let's just say, it's about time. It's our friend Charlie Emanuel. Charlie, happy 2022. How are you, my friend?
Thank you, Jason. I'm doing great. It's good to be here with you today. I'm happy.
Yeah, well, Charlie, we've been wanting to invite you here for a long time. But now is a perfect time because it's Hall of Fame election season. And there are several players that you managed on the 2022 ballot that includes two of the star attractions from that 2008 Phillies team that won the World Series. We're talking Jimmy Rollins and Ryan Howard. So I'd love to spend some time just kind of running through this. And let me start here. Did you know that if we don't count the last 10 years, those 2008 Phillies could be one of only three teams in history that won a World Series and has no Hall of Famers? And since your team went back to the World Series in 2009, it could be the only team to play in back-to-back World Series and win at least one of them with no Hall of Famers. So when you consider the guys who played for you on those teams, does that surprise you?
Yeah, it definitely surprised me. I would think that our guys would they would get talked about more and get more attention. When I think about it, especially the players like Jay Rowe and Ryan Howard, we're talking about big time players. If you sit there day in and day out and get to watch them play like I did, I know exactly what they could do and how valuable they were to our team. And they were a big part of baseball. I mean, I want both of them to get the attention that they deserve because, they are great players.
Yeah. Well, why don't we start with Jimmy Rollins? I'm actually going to write about Jimmy this week because, I'm a voter. He was maybe the most complicated player on the ballot for me. And we can get into the specifics of his Hall of Fame credentials as we go along here. But let me just ask you this simple question. Is Jimmy Rollins a Hall of Famer?
Without a doubt. I think Jimmy Rollins is a Hall of Famer. I saw him at the – I think his career actually started moving in 2002, 2003. Yeah. And from 2004 all through up until he's about 30, 31 years old, his career was very consistent. He was an everyday player for 10 years there. If you go back and look, he played anywhere from 154 games to 160. The only time he ever rested was when the manager just absolutely gave him a day off. So, and when I think about the things he could do, I think his intangibles, when you talk about baseball intangibles, sometimes he definitely get overlooked. I've never heard somebody say anything bad about Jimmy Rollins' defense. Have you? on defense, I all the years I had him, I never had anyone to ever tell me something that he did wrong on defense. I mean that. And he was his talent got overlooked. I think Doug is there with you today, and he got to see him play quite a bit. Jimmy Rollins had a tremendous arm on cutoffs and relays, the way you play the game, everything about how to play the game. He knew, he knew basically the fundamentals of baseball down, and he had a great accurate arm. and all of the things that he did that really was a help in the game. When I look back today and I watch baseball and the things, and when I think about Jimmy and the things that he could do, Jason, especially from a defensive standpoint, and how, and you know, like he was kind of underrated. Like I think because people looked at him as a you know, like an offensive player as far as his speed and the fact that he could play the game right. He could execute right in situations, and you know, like to me, he was a big part of our team. He's a big part of our makeup, but his talent speaks for itself.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Doug, you played with Jimmy, so I'm sure you'd have some thoughts. You'd love to run by Charlie on this.
Yeah, well, I think the thing that was amazing about Jimmy Rollins is he was sort of the right player at the right time. You know, when he came up, I called him Rookie 2.0 because he really embraced he embraced this idea that I belong here and I want to be seen and heard. And you know, as Charlie, you know, knows back in the day, it was like kind of like, tiptoe your way in, get established, pay your dues, don't be too loud, right? Jimmy was the opposite of that. He was like, I'm here and I have something to contribute. And I mentioned the story of how Scott Rowland kicked Jimmy out of our hitting group with Bobby Abreu. It was the four of us. And that was his first week up in the big leagues because he was talking to the baseball during batting practice the whole time. He was like, oh, did you see that? Oh, look at the backspin. Oh. So, I mean, he just kept going. And then he was totally like sad for 3 days after he got kicked out. And I was like, gosh, Scott, that's kind of harsh. But, you know, but Jimmy was determined. He wanted to be a star. And so I guess, Charlie, I wonder, when you talk about the infectious joy and the way he played, is there any sort of Jimmy Rollins story that stands out where you think of like, okay, that sums up Jimmy Rollins and that's what he did for us as a ball player?
Yeah, you know, like when you if you just stop and think about who he was on our team and like you're talking about the things when he first came to the big leagues, how he fit right in. You know, like he definitely he definitely wasn't afraid to talk to speak up and defend himself. He was always accountable for something, you know, like if something that you didn't like or something, or from a manager standpoint, he was always accountable for what he did. And he loved to play the game. He probably loved to play the game more than you would realize if you didn't get to see him a lot. I look at him as he was a big part of our team. And like you said, you thought he came along at the right time. I totally agree with you. Look, when I took over the team as manager, Jimmy was actually, he was coming into his own. I mean, you were there, I think. And he'd been improving for a couple of years. Well, you know, like he kind of stepped in, and not only did he step in, but he stepped up and his performance really, I felt like his performance got better because of who he was playing with. I think our team got better. I think our talent got better, Doug. I think that we had guys in our lineup that had big numbers, and therefore it helped Jimmy, you know, like even make, you know, like the kind of player that he was, the all-around player, you know, like it's from an offensive standpoint, you know, like Jimmy could hit a double, he could hit a triple, he could hit a homer, and not only that, he could play the game right, he could pull balls, move runners over, or hit in situations, things like that. He could, every now and then, even lay down a bunt for a little 5'8" guy, but at the same time too, if you stop and think, in all the tangibles and also his makeup, who he was, his character, and how he went about things, And I think it, when I look at it from a aspect of who he really is, I totally enjoyed him playing on our team. And I enjoyed all the time I got to be around him because he was laughable. He was energy and he was life. And he bought all of those things for our team. And I've seen our team for about 4 or 5 years there when it would get when it jail stayed together. And I feel like Jimmy was definitely one of the guys that definitely played a part in pulling it together.
Yeah, I as you know, Charlie, I covered those teams. I know Jimmy as well as any player on this ballot. I saw all the things that you just talked about. But let me just run through his case a little bit because, as I mentioned, his credentials are so interesting. First, let me just give you the reasons I think to vote for Jimmy Rollins for the Hall of Fame. No shortstop in history ever had his career. Nobody. 2,400 hits, 200 some homers, over 400 steals, over 800 extra base hits. Only National League shortstop in the last 25 years to win an MVP award, 4 gold gloves, most hits in the history of the Phillies franchise, centerpiece of a World Series team. You mentioned how he played every day. Charlie, only National League shortstop in the last 45 years to start all 162 games of a season. So there's all of that. But then I guess I should present the other side because you're going to hear a lot about the other side. Look, Jimmy's lifetime batting average was .264, which is on the low side. I don't know how big a believer you are in OPS plus, adjusted OPS, but his was 95, which means for his career, his OPS was below league average, which is really basically a reflection of the fact that Jimmy didn't walk a lot, especially for a leadoff hitter. And he also doesn't grade out that well when you compare him to other Hall of Fame shortstops in terms of wins above replacement. So you saw it close up. How would you answer the people who throw those numbers at you?
I would think when you look at him, like I talked about, I think the things that he could do on the field, and when you talk, we talk about how good he could play, and that was because that Jimmy Rollins was a 5'8", 5'2" player. I mean, he could win the game for you in about any way that you can imagine. So therefore, you know, like in sitting there watching him play, and for those years he played, I don't see how we could replace him on our team at shortstop and actually have the success that we had just because of who he was. And like Doug was saying, he happened to come along at the right time and be on the right team and things like that. His personality, his talent, and the fact that he was a big, for me, he was a big moment. He was a big moment in the game. You warned him up there. I warned him up there against Broxton when he, remember when he hit the big double at Forest in Philly? You know, we're sitting on the bench. I'll tell you a story real quick. Pete McCannon said to me, we need to get Ross Glode up to hit. And I like Ross Glode. Don't get me wrong, he was a good pinch hitter, but Jimmy was going to be next after Ross Glode. And I said, no, we got to get Jimmy Rollins up to hit. and Jay-Z proved me right. I mean, that was the kind of for in the moment and things like that. You didn't have to worry about Jimmy because he would definitely step up. And there again, I think some of the big things that he did in the game, you know, like they kind of got overlooked. But at the same time, they got overlooked because we did have a talented team. But also, too, if you sit there like I did and watch him play, and he is a game, he is the guy that fits perfectly on our team. And if we was going to pick a team to start out today, you know, like, and they say we want a catcher, shortstop, center fielder. Well, Jimmy Rollins, I had Vizquel. I like Vizquel. Boy, he's tough too. I mean, but at the same time, Jimmy Rollins goes ahead of him.
Yeah. Well, this is, I want to get into this because I try to make this point to people, definitely about Jimmy Rollins, but other players as well. You know, Hall of Fame voting, for whatever reason, has kind of turned into this deal for a lot of people where it's all about what the modern data says about a player. Right. And you take a player like Jimmy Rollins, he definitely had that thing. You know, he, as you just said, he loved the big moment. I can think of so many huge Jimmy Rollins moments that changed games, changed seasons, changed postseason series. You talked about the hit off Jonathan Broxton. That was a walk-off double in the NLCS that turned a loss into a win. There have been just a handful of hits like that in the history of baseball. And I always felt like he was one of those people who just made players around him better. That's not a thing that you can quantify, but Charlie, I used to hear you talk about that, and you just talked about it today. Is that a real quality that he had, that players have, or is it just like a narrative that people like to write to make players look better than they are?
I think that's a quality that he had. I think his leadership would go unnoticed at times. You know, every now and then you're like, he'd pout a little bit, but at the same time too, it wasn't like usually that was when that we weren't playing good. And most of the time his character and who he was, you know, like that kind of we kind of changed that into him, not to the fact that he was always up, because but at the same time, most of the time he picked us up, and his attitude would pick us up. Even sometimes if it was in a aspect of, hey, look, the only time he would ever get upset or something, Jason, was when we weren't winning or playing good. And all of a sudden, you know, like, and he would, you know, like, and, but that side of him wasn't bad for our team. It was kind of like a Chase Utley when people say he was a leader, but when Chase would look right at you, that told you what kind of leader he was. He didn't have to talk. Jimmy Rollins, yeah, but by action. Doug Mike can compliment on that, because that's who Jimmy was. Hey, Jimmy was a straight up fire shooter, man. He wasn't, you know, like, he wasn't a guy, you know, like, I used to kid him about all his nicknames I had for him. I had J. Rowe, and I had Jack Turkey. And the job turkey was when, you know, like, his character came out in the fun and his personality and who he was and things like that. And, you know, like, and I meant that in a great way. I didn't mean that, you know, like, as something derogatory or something. I meant that as real. And that's who he was. When he come back and talk to me on the bench at times, all the time, if he made an out or got a hit, he'd come back and talk to me. Hey, Doug, and I just sit there and in the summertime, I didn't even hear him. I say, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, and he had thought I was agreeing with him, which was okay. That makes sense? That's who Jimmy Rollins is. Hey, Jimmy Rollins is a guy that brings a lot of flair to the game. He brings a lot of show to the game. Yeah, and really probably. Things like that. I mean, and that's who he was. And he played the game completely the way it's supposed to be played. And, you know, like, and he did, he was one of the main stage of our team. I'll tell you something. Our players loved, like, Ryan Howard, Chase Utley, Chooch, all these guys we had. They loved playing with Jimmy Rollins. He was, you know, like, hey, a big part of our team. And not only that, he was let's look at his talent. And you like, his talent speaks for itself, just like the numbers that Jason's running off are. You know, like, his talent speaks for itself. Nowadays, they say it, you know, like, it used to be before they'd even talk to you about a Hall of Fame player, hey, Doug, you had to have a 300 batting average. I remember Mickey Mantle telling me before he went into the Hall of Fame, he told me, he says, if I had done one thing to do over again, I would hit 300, because I hit like 297 or 298. And he says 300 looks a lot better, because that is Hall of Fame hitters and things like that. People don't understand those things. I understand what Mickey Mantle said. You know, like, he when he was thinking of Hall of Fame, he was thinking about somebody extra, you know, and things like that. Nowadays, I look up, and at the end of the year last year, I complained about guys hitting 230, 240, and all of a sudden somebody told me, said, well, 239, that's the average hitter in the major leagues. I pulled up some information on it and looked, and last year, some of the stats that come out and everything like that, they say 239 is the average in the major leagues. And for me, I look at that, I don't buy that at all. you know, like I always wanted you to hit 300. Now, if you hit 270 or 280, yeah, you above the standard major league player, and you're going to play a long time. But at the same time, the numbers that you put up, and also the runs that you add to the board between RBIs and scoring runs count, you know. But yeah, the analytics parts of the game is good. I get in arguments all the time about it, but at the same time, RBIs do count. And you were a player. There's guys in the major leagues that have trouble knocking runs in. But, you know, Jimmy Rollins, he could do – you put him on the stage and let him go, and he'll hold his own with anybody as far as his position in playing the game of where it's supposed to. The shortstop definitely helps him, in my mind, and his defense plays a part on him being a Hall of Fame player.
Yeah, and, you know, I think, you know, the thing that I always felt was so underrated about Jimmy – was, you know, once again, it's not measurable, but it's the wisdom, you know, like, right. Although he was a young, fun loving, kind of excitable kid coming up, you realize like this guy is smart. He's understanding the nuances of the game. I mean, I just remember every time I threw the ball to this guy from the gap or what, he was always in the right position. And I did a segment on ESPN Baseball Tonight once that I pulled from a video earlier about Jimmy getting in the right position on a relay. And it was a perfect shot because I'm at the bottom of the screen and he was squared up and then he turned to the side to get into that glove position. And I mean, and it, you know, four seam, perfect rotation on the ball, always accurate. You know, so I always found like, he learned the game and he started to become that player that was a step ahead. He worked out with Tony Gwynn in the offseason, all these things. So in the end, yeah. So I guess, Charlie, you know, my question to you is, of all the numbers that you feel is closely able to identify a player like Jimmy or Chase or what they do, are there any numbers that you lean into that feel like tell the best story?
Well, when I think of Jimmy, you know, like, when you look at him from an offensive standpoint, you know, like, too, like, Doug, when I first started managing the major leagues, for me to let you to hit 3-0, I wanted to do that. You know, like, I wanted my players to know how to do that. I think when I was managing the minor leagues, I think that I taught that very well. I do, and I'm happy about it because my guys, you know, like, they got good balls to hit on 3-0, and, you know, like, and they could really do some damage to you. And I look at Jimmy Rollins sometime, and you can go back and probably nowadays you can probably go back and find games where he hit a 3-0 home run and won a game for us in the ninth inning or something like that. And you'd probably be surprised how many times he did it. But at the same time, what you're talking about, you think about him, look, here's a guy, he'll have doubles, he'll have triples, and he'll hit 20 to he hit 30 home runs at 1 year and things like that on his big year, and he puts together numbers, and whether his numbers, you know, like somebody over here might have a greater number, but for all those categories that go into the offense part of it, Jimmy has, like, he plays with everybody in my mind, you know, like, does that make sense? If you count your base hits he gets and things like that, and also his stolen bases, things like that, and the little things he does, the how he can play situation baseball. And like you said, he's very knowledgeable of the game. He knows how to catch a ball in the right position to get rid of it. And as far as running bases and stealing bags and everything like that, he knows the game. He is a frontline player in the game. And I think that he is valuable to us as a MVP player and things like that, usually probably every year you would throw him in those years that I managed in Philadelphia. He definitely goes in there as get votes for our MVP on our team in some way, somehow. If you stop and categorize the game out to the facts where you key in on the whole game itself, Jimmy Rollins brought the whole game to the ballpark. Mm-hmm. Robbie Alomar used to bring the whole game to the ballpark.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paulo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man of the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man of the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Let me ask you about some other guys in that team, especially Ryan Howard and Chase Utley, because we could do an hour just on Jimmy Rollins. But Ryan Howard, also his first year on the ballot. Charlie, the 4 years from 2006 to 2009, Ryan Howard averaged 50 homers and 143 RBIs. Think about it. 50 and 143 was his average season. Here are the only players who've ever done that over any four-year period. Babe Ruth, Ken Griffey Jr., Sammy Sosa, and Ryan Howard. Like, that tells you what a dominator he was for a period of time. I think the question is this, Charlie. Did Ryan Howard's period of offensive greatness last long enough for him to be a Hall of Famer?
I think, you know, there again, you know, like, look, he's my guy. I sit there and I watch him play, and I know how valuable he was to our team. And what you're saying is, I already knew his numbers, believe me.
And you lived them.
Think of it, you know, like, there's proof holes in ours, all these guys in the National League. And I would say for about 4 or 5 years there, you got a complete argument that Howard might have been the best hitter in the National League. I didn't get to see the American League as much as I saw the National League, but from a National League standpoint, watching Ryan Howard play, you could argue that he was the best hitter in the National League as far as production. And also, if you Ryan Howard, what really go back and look at what he hit from the seventh inning on in the game sometime, or go back and look at the big important ribbies that he would get and things like that. There again, you know, like the whole package, because he struck out quite a few times and things like that, that was more noticed than what he did for us. Look, Ryan Howard's our table setter. He did it. His performance almost does two guys in the major league. if am I right or wrong? Look, yeah. People say you get an MVP because you hit 35 home runs and knock in 100 and score 85. Well, Ryan Howard almost doubled those stats. So how can you eliminate a guy that has a big year? I mean, like 4 or 5 straight years in a row. Injuries definitely hurt him. You know, like when he hurt his leg. You know, like when he tore his Achilles and things like that. And when he come back to play, it was his backside, and Doug, after that, both of his knees kind of went, and he could not really push off of his backside. If you get video, I've seen video on MLB, and they show Howard in his younger days when he used his legs, weight was transferred really, really nice, man. Ryan Howard was a big technique hitter. You know, he didn't, Jimmy Tomey was a mauler. Ryan Howard was a big Chase Utley hitter. And to me, you know, like that kind of tells you who he was. And there's argument that, you know, like he definitely, when you talk about it and those seasons that he had, like you're talking about, Jason, they definitely correspond with other guys who were big time players. And his career definitely was hindered or cut short by injuries.
Yeah, well, Ryan, I mean, I remember him coming up. I mean, I was there for that, and I went bowling with him in spring training. You know, he was a really good bowler, by the way. And yeah, the power. I think he hit one over like the Apple or something at Shea Stadium or wherever. So, but I'm curious about one thing that I remember about Ryan was talking to him as a veteran player and him sort of taking it all in, and then later covering him as an analyst with ESPN. And him saying to me at one point, okay, I understand now what you were going through as a veteran player and what it's like to kind of age in this game. So I'm curious about the guy that, you know, started and the guy that finished and what you saw in the sort of evolution of Ryan Howard, like who he became and how he passed that on to other players.
Right. I think if you're on a team with Ryan Howard, he definitely pulls for you. I mean, if you stop and think of who he is and things like that, and he likes players. I've never actually heard Ryan Howard really. If he said something, you know, like where you have an argument or something like that, I mean, he usually wins that argument just by being a professional. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Just really, because that's who he is. I mean, he's hard to explain to people. But at the same time, Ryan Howard was the kind of player who he loved to hit, and he was stubborn in some ways because actually here's a guy that did not like to pull the baseball. Mm-hmm. And you know, like mm-hmm. people yeah. say he was strong, and we did not, no way did I ever want to take away his strength to the opposite field or in the middle of the field or whatever. But at the same time, you know, like they used to say about him hitting balls, you know, rolling over balls to second base. Well, those balls actually that he was hitting, they were down and away and things like that. Those balls were not really inside. And Ryan Howard was one of the biggest, best looking hitters in the major leagues for about 4 or 5 years there. I mean, you know, like when I think about it, what he could have been. I also too, you know, like I don't want to say nothing out of line or nothing like that, but Ryan Howard's always my guy. And I used to see after I got let go and things like that, I followed him. He'd hit 25 home runs. He'd hit 27 or something like that, or 23, 24. And I think to myself, if I was there, he would have got 550 at bats. And things like that. And it's not, believe me, that's not saying anything bad about nobody else. I could care less. But when I'm thinking about it, and I think of, if I cheated him out of 250 more at bats or 200 at bats, man, I would have never knew what he could do, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And that's how much I love Ryan Howard. Ryan Howard, to me, like he's a great person. And just to stand there sometime and watch him hit, people say, you know, I've heard people say about how, you know, like some of the hits he got hitting the clutch. I'd say the one that he got before Matt Stairs hit his home run was one of the biggest hits of his career. When he hit a hard single up a middle on a left-hand pitcher, you know, kept the inning going, moved the runners, things like that. You know, when I stop and think, he used to ask me about his longest home run. That people would ask him about, what's the longest home run you hit? He'd say the third deck in Philadelphia, or he'd say something else. And he'd say, what do you think, Chuck? And I'd go, that wasn't your longest. He said, well, then what was my longest? I said, when you hit that trolley car out there in San Francisco. He hit the bottom of the trolley car. Hey, listen, I saw it. Hey, that was his longest home run. Believe me, I kept up with him every day. And who he was and our success, we're talking with the two players we're talking about, definitely, you know, like, hey, look, we had other guys on our team, of course. We had a tremendous team. We had everyday players. But at the same time, there's a lot of guys. And Ryan Howard, he was definitely a big part of our makeup of our team. Hit and there for about 4 or 5 years, like Jason said, the price is in the pudding. That speaks for itself. I mean, I could never knock him, but because of, you know, like I've seen him how good he was, and I knew how good he was. He creates a lot of interest when you sit down and talk about the good players. I saw guys like compare Ryan Howard, somebody like, I would say, Willie McCovey and guys of this sort, Willie Stargell and these guys like that. And, you know, like, and here's this guy, you know, like he's big like they were, big left and strong hitter. I think he was just as good or better than they were. And look, that would be my argument. I would never come off of it.
Yeah. Ryan Howard had a presence about him. Boy, there's no doubt about that. Let me ask you about another guy on that team who had an incredible presence. And that was the guy who stood next to Ryan Howard, Chase Utley. You know, Chase won't appear in the Hall of Fame ballot for another 2 years, Charlie, but I really think of all the guys on your team, he is probably the best bet to get elected. And it's interesting because, like, in reality, Chase's period of true dominance was really 5 years, right? 2005 to 2009, because after that, he had a harder time, as you know, staying healthy. But even still, all right, 2005 through 2014, it's 10 years. You know who led all second basemen in baseball in wins above replacement? It was Chase Utley. And like, it's not even close in the National League. He about doubled anybody else in the league. So let me ask you again, a real simple question. Is Chase Utley a Hall of Famer?
Yeah, he's a Hall of Famer, yes. For me, he's a Hall of Famer. And the reason is, but there again, too, you got to really sit there and think about it. Because when you start, you can maneuver numbers any way you kind of want to. But now when we talk about Chase Utley, we're talking about the most prepared person that I've ever been around for 60 years. He's the most prepared person I ever was around. He was the one that led by an example. He always hustled. He used to bring, listen, Jason, he'd be down 0-2 on two outs in an inning, nobody on base. And you could count at least, I'd say 3, 5, 6 times a year, we would win that game because Chase Utley hustled on a play and beat the throw to first or did something and got on a base. And he did that very consistent. People did not see those things in how he played. But at the same time, too, not only that, he was a real good hitter. And, yeah, he played a lot of games. And at times, you know, like he was hard to get out of the lineup. But most of the time, you know, like I didn't want to take him out of the lineup. But maybe I should have rested him a little bit more. But at the same time, too, we're not talking about 2 or 3 days or something like that. I might have rested him a day every now and then, might have helped him a little bit. But at the same time, too, he gave everything he had to the game. Everything he had, he gave to the game. I've never heard him complain about some guy hitting him with the ball. I never heard him complain about somebody spiking him and cutting his legs up. You should have seen that, things like that. You know, like he played hard and he played right. And, you know, like, and I've seen the thing that happened with when he slid into second base and brought a lot of controversy to the game. Believe me, Chase Utley was just playing baseball. He was not meaning to hurt no one. Mm-hmm. He had a job to do. I would think less of him if he didn't, you know, take the guy, you know, to try to, you know, like get in the guy's way from throwing to first base or something. But at the same time, too, he was a very clean player, very, 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 very hard-nosed guy. And you take the characters of Howard and Jimmy Rollins and Utley, and all of them mixed real good together. and all three of them had a lot of respect for each other.
Charlie, do you have a favorite Chase Utley story? Everybody has one. I know my personal favorite of yours is the time at the end of spring training, you guys called Chase into the office to tell him you were sending him to the minor leagues. How'd that go?
That didn't go too good because, you know, like he dropped a bomb on us and he said, "You guys don't want to win." You know, that's what he said.
That's not quite how he put it, though, right?
Right. But that's what I said. He dropped a bomb on us. He dropped a big letter on us and looked us, you know, something looked you dead in the face and didn't smile. I mean, really, it was just solid, really. Unreal. Seriously. You know, like, I can tell you all kinds of Chase's stories. One of the funniest things, you know, like, I don't know if it's the funniest thing, but I remember it because he didn't like to smile. It was hard to get him to smile.
Right.
And playing Atlanta one night in Philly, and the fan went across the field, and the guy in left field, I'm trying to think of his name, he trips the fan. He trips a fan, the fan goes down, and Utley's on deck. And I looked over and he was just cackling, laughing, you know, like, I'm going. And somebody said to me, said, "Chuck, do you think that was funny?" I said, "Oh, did, so I think it's funny." But I can tell you all kinds of Chase Utley stories, man. Hey, unreal. And also, too, believe me, he played on our team. He carried a lot of presence. And with those three guys, believe me, they were solid. I cannot really imagine. I was around a lot of great teams, things like that. But our lineup in Philadelphia had great balance to it. And we found ways. Another thing that Jimmy and Ryan and Chase all did, though, too, was if you go look at our lineup and the way it was up, we had speed at the top of the order, and we had some speed if we wanted to. We had some speed after Ryan if we wanted to hit Worth fifth or sixth and things like that. And we did not – our position players did not have to bunt because we had Davey Lopes, and he was one of the best base runner coaches in baseball. And we used to steal at a high percentage and things like that. And we can move the game. And we used all of our assets to score. And those players were the ones that was doing that. It definitely was. I had nothing to do with them in situations and things like that and executing. And they executed the game for us good.
Yeah, and I think of Chase. Well, I remember him wearing black a lot. And so Randy Wolf used to call him Christopher Walken, with all his black. The thing that I always will remember about Chase, first of all, I could not believe how fast he was when I first saw him run from home to first. It was unbelievable. I mean, he had to be one of the top five fastest players in the game going from home to first. This guy was a blazing speed. So that, I just want to underscore that. But I also remember when I got sent down after a really good spring training, Mike Morgan, the pitcher who pitched for Cubs, Cardinals, he pulled me aside and said, "Hey, you deserve to be here. Just pay your dues. Just get down there, do what you did. You'll be right back up here." That sort of little bit of advice went a long ways because years later, the same thing happened to Chase Utley. We broke camp. We had a couple exhibition games and he got sent down. And I got a chance to give that back to him and just say, "Hey, you know what? You're probably going to have my spot. I'm the old guy now here." So, and so it was good to see once he came up and just showed just some of the little things he did, the small parts of the game, just the way you could throw the bat at the ball and two strikes look bad against a lefty and still slice it the other way. So I'm curious about, when you think of Chase and just how he did have that ice cold kind of look, who you saw in Chase Utley when the time was past where he was not necessarily that like main guy, but he was still contributing to the team.
You know what I saw in Doug, I think that he actually talked more to the players. I think that the players, like that he thought, were having kind of a hard time or not understanding things. I think that he was more understanding toward them. I think that's probably when I don't get to talk to him much anymore, but the last time I talked to him, I think that's probably why the Dodgers like him, around in their organization and stuff, because he has a pour with the players. Like we can sit down, and he can talk, and he talks more now than he used to. And he laughs a little bit more than he used to. But at the same time, what you're talking about, Chase Utley was real. Like when I tell you Jimmy and Ryan were real people, Chase Utley, that's who he was. And who he was, was nothing phony. He did not have to have his name in the paper. He did not have to be on Sports Center. He wanted our team to win. And he was also one of those guys. I'm not saying that he didn't want to get some hits every night, because I think he did. But at the same time, if he didn't get any, he wouldn't be over his head down and things like that. He'd be come out the next day and he'd say, "I'll get some today, Chuck, watch me." And then things like that, really. I mean, that's kind of who he was. And like I said, when you're talking to the three players, they were top notch at what they did. And we were very fortunate that they were on our teams at that time. But that's what made up our team. And all three of the personalities different between Howard Utley and Jimmy Rollins, different people, but they played a huge part and how we played the game. And playing the game is right is what I see. I look at baseball now, and some of the things that Chase and Jimmy and Ryan Howard and them kind of taught me was how to play the game right, how to get the most out of your players, how to get, you know, like what kind of offense do we want to have? We want to have an offense where we can use all of our talent to manufacture runs, whether it be of a home run or a hit and run or a bunt or a guy, you know, like things like that. I'm a home run guy. You know that. But at the same time, too, to play the game the right way and things like that, when you lose a game, that you don't look back as much on it when you know that you gave it all you had and knew how to play and we were interested in the right way. You know, we had good defense on our team. And what, Jace, I never had to get on our team about defense because we like to play defense. And I give Jimmy Rollins and Chase a lot of credit for that, who they was and their status on a team and things like that. We like to play defense. And we liked our outfielders like to play defense. When we had Victorino and Worth and them in the outfield, no balls got a ball that went down the right field line in the air. If it didn't land in the stands, we caught it. And things like people seriously go back and watch us play. I mean, that's still the fun of me thinking about those teams, really. And it gets down to the character, and it gets down to a mindset, and it also gets down to the want to. And I think those guys are all good players because they want to excel at what they did. I mean, really.
You know, Charlie, listening to you talk about this, it made me think about something. Jimmy Rollins and Chase Utley, in so many ways, could not have been more different. And yet, they played together more seasons than any modern double play combination except Lou Whitaker and Alan Trammell. And they won together. They made incredible plays together. They're going to go through the Hall of Fame ballot together. It's just so interesting how two guys could be so different. And yet, you know, I talked about that thing that I thought Jimmy had. Chase had it too. Like, how could they be so different and yet still have that same thing about them?
Right. I want to tell you something. It was amazing. And people, there again, you know, like I've always give our players, you know, like the credit for our success as far as how we played, and especially when it comes to winning a game and losing a game and things like that. And we knew how to play baseball. And that was our biggest assets. And the reason we knew how to play is because the guys that we had, and also the guys that was our star players, you know, like they had to want to play. And so therefore, you know, like it made the game much easier for us to play because we talk baseball. We came to the ballpark to win that day. Nothing was more important than us winning that game that day. And we were, and I always thought that we don't want to look ahead to tomorrow or behind us because we concentrating on winning that day. And I think the attitude of our team, you can ask our players. I mean, they'll tell you what the attitude of our team was. And those guys that we're talking about, they had a lot to do with who we were.
Right. And so when you're talking about players who were literally the driving forces in teams that won, how much of that should feed into our Hall of Fame deliberations? You know, is it about metrics or is it about winning?
Hey, listen, I don't know about other people. I can only talk for myself. I'm about winning. Hey, I'm about winning the game. The number one priority is for us to concentrate on winning the game today. Winning takes care of everything. It makes everything much easier. It makes everything much enjoyable. It opens a lot of doors for all those players. That you win a World Series and it changes some guys' life who are extra players or you know, like our middle relievers and things like that. Hey, they'll follow them everywhere they go or their whole life. People will recognize them. They'll know you and things like that. And it's all about winning. It should be about winning the game. Numbers are good, but at the same time, to put those big wins up, like you think of the New York Yankees, I think of 26 championship flags that fly around their stadium. And I look at that and I go, man, how hard that was to do that. But maybe to them, it wasn't hard at all. Because, you know, like they might have knew what they was doing more than the other team. You know, really.
Yeah. Well, Charlie, I'm curious, but the players that were mentioning, Rollins, Utley, Howard, what did they teach you about winning? Was there something that you kind of went in and learned from them and really kind of changed your thinking about it?
What it taught me was the fact that, you know, like that, if you know how to win, you know, like you don't want to lose it. And you want, hey, look, we want for, you know, something for about five or six years in Philadelphia. Hey, we had a team that, you know, like you come in there every day, was the same team for 4 or 5 years, at least, was the same identical makeup, same talking baseball, playing the same way day in and day out. And then all of a sudden, you bet. Hey, your experience in the game. All of a sudden, you know, like when you start going bad, what happens is you start taking that chemistry and you start taking that different things out of your game. All of a sudden, you know, like you bring new people in and they don't really adjust to who you are and what you work to build up. I was sitting one day in a we were trying to sign Kadire, and I'll say this, and I don't mean to get out of hand, but he made a statement to us in a meeting, and he said, somebody asked him, says, you played for Minnesota for 9 years, you know, like, will it be hard for you to play for someone like us? And he says, and he looked at it, and he looked at us, and he goes, no, it won't be hard at all. He said, because we lost what we had in about those years that we were good, and we lost that in about 5 minutes. And I caught on what he was saying. Mm-hmm. And you probably can understand that too, because it is about attitude. It is about makeup, and it is about those guys. That's your winning team. For 5 years, we had a good winning team. Now what happened to that team? You know, like what caused it to deteriorate? Why did we lose our character? You know, like if you want to point fingers, usually you point to the manager and then you point to the coach in baseball. But at the same time, too, when I think about those things, I knew what we had and I give it all to the players. Hey, Doug, we could bring somebody in, during the winter or as a players like Dobbs, Stars and guys like that. Mm-hmm. And they fit right on our team. You know, like they had the same attitude we had. They wanted to play. You know, like Jason Worthy said to me one day, and Jason, we had some problems with him. And he used to tell me how much that he respected Chase Utley. And I said, if you respect Chase Utley, I said, you don't have to play like him, play with him. You know, like our players, you know, like I wanted our players to play with them. And things like that, you know, like we want to have fun, and we have fun by winning the game first, and then we celebrate, and then when that night's over, we come back to the ballpark with the idea that we won't win again today, and we don't. That one that we won last night, we already put that one in a book. We're gonna put another one in our today, and they had that kind of makeup, and that's also what made them who they were.
Charlie, let me ask you a little bit about the way you managed. You had a certain style when you managed. You believed in everyday players, right? And nobody in today's game, nobody plays every day anymore, man. Right? It's the age of load. It's the age of load management. So if you managed today, would you be a load management guy?
Hey, I'll tell you something. Check this out. This is exactly. Hey, look, you know, like, I used to hate sitting on the bench. And I said, no, really. But at the same time, too, when I look at managing the game, I want I want to get the most out of you that we possibly can. And I want you to be happy, and I want you to and focus on what we're doing day in and day out. But at the same time, I also want players, my extra players, to be good enough and also have a talent enough when we give them a chance to try to beat you out, if that makes sense. And mm-hmm. and to me, that, you know, like, that covers, you know, like the part of, you know, like for the guy to be pushed, you know, like, and I want to leave the door open for that guy to be, for someone to be able to beat somebody out on our team. And that could be hard, but at the same time too, that also brings you together. I'll tell you something. And that brings you a fighting spirit. Like, Albert Bell was a great hitter for us. I used to mm-hmm. always brag on Albert Bell. Well, all of a sudden, here's Jimmy Tolby, Manny Ramirez, Sandy Alomar, and these guys telling me, "Hey, Chuck, shut your mouth and watch us hit. Hey, we going to out hit Albert Bell." Mm-hmm. Hey, I won, man. I walk away, Doug. I feel good about myself. Yeah. Huh? It's all maneuver. Hey, it's an attitude that, to me, like, it, you pull together. I mean, I love managing. I like being a hitting coach, but I loved managing, because when I manage, I can make my own decisions, and I can, you know, like, hey, look, would I ever admit a mistake? It'd be hard for me to. Of course I did. But at the same time too, you know, like, we also had players that was good enough, and they were focused enough on what we wanted to do. And our teams, when I was in Philadelphia, it was definitely a we. It wasn't no one guy. When Ryan Howard's putting up huge numbers and things like that, I don't ever remember ever seeing him get out of line as far as, you know, brass or too pushy or something. He's, you know, like, he was always upbeat, you know, like, he knew what he was doing, but at the same time, he didn't boast or brag. Even Jimmy would never talk about his numbers, you know, like, but he would talk about it, some play that he made or some hit that he got and things like that. But we didn't talk about, you know, individual performances a whole lot. They were naturally there for them. And and to me, like, we built that up where they could beat people out. Victorino won his spot on our team. Jason Worth won his spot on our team. And so did Chase, and definitely you were around when Jimmy won his, and Ryan Howard definitely paid his dues, and he won as good as he was, and things like that. He definitely went through a trying time where he proved how good he was, and that mm-hmm. to me, that's what made all those guys. That's what to me, like, grades out to be a Hall of Famer, is how professional they are too.
Mm-hmm. You know, Charlie, one of my favorite things about you is, like, you never made any bones about who you were, who you weren't, like, what you loved about baseball, what you didn't love so much. Like, I know you loved your pitchers. You needed pitching to win, but you were always about hitters, right? Like, it was always hitting season in Charlie Manuel's world. Am I reading you right?
Jason, listen, I love pitchers when they pitch for me. I don't like pitchers on the other team. I love my pitchers when they pitch for me. And, you know, like, and also too, I shower them with attention, just like I did a position player. But now, which one I like the best, I ain't going to never say that. But at the same time, I want my pitchers to be good. Hey, check this out. You know, Danny Baez came to the big leagues, Jason.
Yeah, Danny.
And they were teaching him, you know, like, they were teaching him English. And, you know, like, when I first met him, you know, like, we was in spring training with the Indians, you know, like, I was managing the team when I first met him, and he goes, and he looked at me, he says, I speak English. And I said, oh, good. And he looked at me, and he goes, I like you. I looked at him, and I said, you went 20 damn games for me, and I like you a lot better. And when I see him, whenever I see Danny Baez, he tells me that story all the time. Believe me, and that's how I feel. Yeah, who I am is who I am, and you know where I came from. I know where I came from, and I knew how hard I worked to get there and everything like that. I didn't have to have somebody patting me on the back and stuff like that. You know, like, because if you work hard enough, and you accomplish things, the people like those guys that play for me, they definitely, you know, I'll tell you something, they definitely deserve a lot of the credit. And when people say, I accept all of my accolades, I could never accept accolades because the guys I had were the ones that put me in a good position too. I feel really good about who I am. The older I get, I think I enjoy life just as good because I get to talk to people. And it's like you and Doug, and like people that I know and things like that. When I get to talk to you and you feel, and you got happy vibes and we having a conversation about something. I love that. That's the part about the game. I think it keeps me hanging around.
Well, we're the lucky ones, man, because we got to spend an hour talking to you, which is always fun.
Yeah, so fun.
Charlie, I can't let you leave without playing America's favorite game, Know Your Charlie Manuel Trivia. Okay. I got a great one for you, man. You're going to love this, okay? Ready? You became the hitting coach of the Indians for good in 1994, and then you were there and you managed them until 2002. Became the manager of the Phillies in 2005 and managed them until 2013. So it's about the same amount of time. So here's the question. Who hit more home runs for you? Was it Jim Thome in that time from 1994 to 2002 in Cleveland, or was it Ryan Howard in Philadelphia from 2005 to 2013?
I want to tell you something. That's a tough one. I've never ever looked at that seriously. But you know what? I think it. I'll say Howard.
Wow, you are good, man. This is one of the most incredible ones ever. I knew it'd be fun. I knew it'd be close. Yeah. I didn't know how close until I actually did the math today. Yeah. How about this? Ryan Howard hit 309 home runs for you in Philadelphia. Right. You know how many Jim Thome hit for you in Cleveland? 308. 309 to 308.
But that.
Oh my goodness.
So I know you knew that.
No. Hey, let me tell you something. No, I did not know. I did not know that. But I was with Thome so long. You know, like people don't understand it, but you know, like I was. Thome used to like. He was with me for all the time during the summer, mostly. I mean, and things like that, you know. Like,
minors too, yeah.
And he kind of grew into who he was, if that makes sense. But when Ryan had it at the major league level, you know, like once he started getting to play regular and things like that, and he just took off and he just exploded and he started the first couple of years, he started, you know, just tearing it up. And I remember the sports writers would ask me, you think Ryan's going to hit 300, could hit 300? And I said, yeah. Well, he hit 300 that year. I said that I thought he could hit 300. I didn't know what year, but at the same time, he hit 300 that year. Yep. And he hit a lot of home runs. But also, too, I kind of follow, you know, like I definitely follow things. I think I follow information and stuff, and I follow the game more than people think. I do. I definitely – you know, like I follow everything that happens in the game. I try to, you know, I think I got a great memory, but at the same time too, I love the game and I follow, I know things. Sometimes I hear people, you know, like in analytics and they say something and I already know that. I'm already ahead of that. I don't like to say it because, you know, like it makes you sound like that, you know, everything or something like that. But at the same time, I think that also is a part of being in the game. And it's a player with a good memory, he's got a good memory if you're a good player and things like that, because you will pay attention about everything. I pay attention to more on the bench and things like that, and people think I do. I say goofy stuff on the bench sometimes, like just to get some life in our team or something. But at the same time, I know, you know, like I know exactly what I'm saying, you know. But it's, you know, like in working people is fun in life. You know, like if it's a right thing and good things are happening to you, if that makes sense.
You're the best, man. I right. We need to let you go, but look forward to seeing you in spring training, whatever the heck that is. And thank you so much for taking the time to visit us here.
Yeah, well, thank you, Goni. Thank you guys for having us. And hey, Doug, it's always good seeing you. And you're like. and you look happy. And when you're happy, I'm happy. Jason, when you're happy, I'm happy. When you get an award, Jason, I got that award. How about that?
Hey, Charlie, we feel the same way, man. Yeah. We really do.
Yeah, thanks you so much, Charlie, you're for welcome. All you do and what you bring to the game, too. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Okay, Doug, for the first time in 2022, it is time for listener trivia, our way of involving you, our favorite listeners, in this show. And once again, this year, we will literally involve you by picking a trivia question from some lucky listener and then inviting the lucky listener to join us and attempt to stump us with their question. We'll tell you how you can do that in just a few minutes. Doug, we are now the trivia kings. We are so hot. We should be playing the Powerball every week. We'd probably win, right?
And we should do it on the surface of the sun, just to add that exclamation point. And I'm willing to just say, you know what, 2021, it's over. It's good. I want to end on that note. I feel good. So I'm open-minded to 2022 as we're trying to step up the degree of difficulty with the temperature of how hot we were. And I think we have just the man to help us out here and to throw us a curveball.
I think so, too. Just to recap for all those listeners who are not keeping track the way we are. This is truly bizarre, but somehow we've gotten five of the last six trivia questions right. So I'm not even sure we'll get five right all of 2022, but whatever. Let's see what happens. We're going to find out, Doug. Let us welcome in this week's special trivia guest star, a guy who was here before we got hot. As soon as we got him out of the way, it's Howard Goldberg. Howard, welcome back to Starkville.
Gentlemen, it's good to see you again. Had a fun time. I thought I'd like to come on back.
Well, we're glad you are back. Howard, for those who, again, don't keep track, was here in November with a great question about Buster Posey's retirement, which we missed. Normally, we don't invite listeners back again so soon. You know, we like to spread these 3 minutes of fame around. But Howard, one reason we wanted to bring you back was we loved your question. The second is we wanted to gloat since we've been a lot better since you were here last. Like since your Buster Posey question, you should know we've been hotter than Steph Curry. Okay.
I hope I am up to the challenge.
All right, we're going to find out. Just a quick question. How did you come up with this question? I asked for Hall of Fame trivia. Did that just get your juices flowing?
Yeah, it does. That's just, well, I'll say the last time when I looked up, I thought, you know, you're just looking up all these great things about some of these great players and what they've done, and you find these great combinations of facts and, you know, fun. And I thought, oh, you know, I had a good time. Like I said, good time last time. I'll throw in another one, and I'll see if they bite. And sure enough,
we did.
You feel interested. You're stepping up to the plate.
Yep, you nabbed us again. All right, let's get to it. Let's hear your trivia stumper.
Okay. As you know, it is a Hall of Fame question. So there are two Major League Baseball pitchers who have won multiple Cy Young Awards and multiple World Series rings. Can you name them both?
All right. So we need two pitchers. They've won at least two Cy Youngs and at least two World Series rings, but they are not.
Not in the Hall of Fame.
They are not in the Hall of Fame.
Not in the Hall. All right. Okay. Okay.
All right. One question that Doug had is whether active pitchers are eligible. I can't think of anybody who would fit that, but just so we know.
There are no active pitchers that I believe would fit in this category.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Got it. Well, all right. Well, one of these is easy. He's on the ballot right now. That's it. Like, you don't have to respond yet, but it's got to be Tim Lincecum. You're the same listener who asks us a Buster Posey trivia question. So I'm sure that Tim Lincecum is one of these. Now, I wish I could remember everyone who's won multiple Cy Youngs. Doug, here's some of the names I wrote down.
All right.
Ron Guidry, Vida Blue, Denny McLean, Mike Cuellar, Dave McNally. That was the group from the 1970s. Did any of them win two Cy Youngs? I don't think so. I wrote down Dwight Gooden from the 1980s. I don't think he's right either. I think he didn't win multiple Cy Youngs and he didn't win multiple World Series. Then I went through Jake Peavy, CeCe Sabathia, Dave Stewart, Chris Carpenter. There's not multiple Cy Youngs in there. And then the last guy on my list is Roger Clemens. Mm-hmm. Definitely won at least one with the Yankees, but did he win two? So I don't know if I'm missing somebody from the Yankee teams or the Dodger teams of the 50s and 60s, but
Cardinals.
I'd like you to help, man. It's up to you.
Yeah. I had a whole different list because I just threw everybody out. All right. So since you could probably strike through some of my answers here pretty quickly. So what about like Oral Hershiser? Is he in the Hall? I don't know.
He's not in the Hall.
Okay.
But.
Did he win?
Did not win multiple Cy Youngs.
Oh, okay. He only won the one in the streak year. Did he win that year?
88.
Oh, yeah. Man. Okay. I don't what about like a Frank Viola?
Frank Viola won the World Series.
Oh, yeah, he did. That's right. Wait, no, that's right. Well, that's the criteria, right? He won.
Yeah.
You have to win two.
Oh. You have to win multiple
World right.
And multiple Cy Youngs.
Did he win multiple Cy Youngs?
I don't know. All right. Now, what about a Dave Steeb?
Dave Steeb.
No?
I don't believe Dave Steeb ever won.
I have Clemens on here. I have, what about like a Brett Saberhagen? Did he sneak in there? You know, Royals.
That's a good name.
Good name. And I have Vida Blue on here, actually. Vida Blue. Because of the 70s A's, right? He won. Didn't he win multiple Cy Young?
I don't think he did. Yeah. He won a lot of awards.
He won an MVP. Right? Did he win an MVP?
MVP and Cy Young, right.
Man. All right. So those were kind of my best stabs at it.
All right. So besides Clemens, what's your best? Clemens, Saberhagen?
Frank Viola, Dave Steeb. Oh, yeah. Dave Steeb. I have Clemens on here. Brett Saberhagen, Vida Blue.
Okay. Clemens won a bunch of Cy Youngs. He's not in the Hall. He was on those Yankee teams he definitely was on the 2000 Yankees.
Yeah, he threw the bat at Piazza.
Piazza, right.
But then he lost with the Astros. He didn't
win.
Right,
but what about the 99 Yankees?
I don't know. Did they win? I was there. I should have been there, but
they won. Was he on the team? It's so tempting to tweet, isn't it? I mean, to cheat.
Yeah, that's a good. All right. So Well, let's cross off. So we have Frank Viola didn't win two Cy Youngs, we think, right? That's probably right.
I don't think so.
All right. Dave Steeb? Probably not.
Never won. No, no way.
Not John Tudor, Andy Pettit. All right.
No, I never want to say that. Did David Brett Saberhagen Cohen? Win Saberhagen. Two?
Yeah, Saberhagen. All right. So
did he win? He definitely won in 85. I don't think he ever won again. I of all these, I like Clemens. But should we ask Howard for a hint? Howard, can you tell us like what era this was?
It is recent. It is within the past. This player has played within the past 20 years.
Okay. So that's right in the Clemens wheelhouse.
Yeah. I mean, the Clemens is a good guess. I mean,
all right. I think we should go that way. Sabathia. I think we should go Tim Lincecum, Roger Clemens. Okay.
CeCe Sabathia, did he win two? I know he won the World Series in 2009.
Won the Cy Young in Cleveland. Did he ever win after that? Not that I remember.
Yeah. All right. Let's do it. Clemens and Lincecum.
Like what we usually do, Howard, as you know, is we mention the right answer, talk ourselves out of it. I'm not sure what the heck we just did, but let's just find out.
Well, let's find out. Yeah.
What are the odds that it's Tim Lincecum and Roger Clemens?
Well, whatever streak of correct answers you have had.
Have had past tense.
It's building up to the crescendo. Whatever you have had, it continues because
it continues.
Oh my God. Get out of here. I honestly don't believe this anymore. Like, we're on such a roll. We could like fire up any wild answer and get it right now.
I'm going to Vegas tomorrow.
That is all on black or reflect like
Howard, we got three right all season, and we've gotten six of the last seven. How is this even possible?
Don't tempt me.
Oh man, wow, that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah. Well, as you know, if you listen to this segment, whether we get the question right or wrong, not that we ever get them wrong, we still bring in our mayor, in this case, once again, our acting mayor, Cameron Molina, to provide the highlight of the segment by playing some spectacular play-by-play clip involving this week's question. So, Mr. Acting Mayor, what do you got this week?
2014, lovely year. Tim Lincecum, the mustachioed man, love that mustache, comes in to San Diego and registers his second career no-hitter on June 25th. It's a sight all too familiar for Padres fans.
Yeah.
Two down in the ninth. The 1-2 pitch. Curveball grounded to second. Panic's got it. The throw to first. It's a no-hitter. Tim Lincecum, he pitched one against these Padres last July, and not quite 1 year later, he does it again, this time here at home.
Ah, it's our friend John Miller.
John Miller.
Love hearing John Miller. Hearing Tim Lincecum in all his glory. God, he did torment those Padres. Howard, excellent question.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Really good question. And so thanks for joining us in the Starkville Trivia Arena once again.
Yes, and I'm sure we'll see you again soon. I will see you next time.
Yes, yes. We'll have to bring you back for the tiebreaker.
Be our guest. Best of three.
Yes.
All right. Thanks so much, Howard.
Thanks, Howard. Appreciate it, gentlemen.
Strange but true.
It is time now for maybe our favorite part of this whole show, the strange but true part. This week, I thought we would have some fun with the weirdest injuries of 2021. I'm not sure the guys who ran into those injuries had as much fun as we're about to have, but hopefully they can laugh about this now, and we're always here to help with that. But first, this is such a great opportunity to have Doug tell one of his classic stories. Just can't pass that up. Doug, I know you saw lots of bizarre injuries in your day. I just need to hear the Dave Hollins Spider-Man story one more time.
Well, let's see. Well, fortunately, the beauty of this is you wrote a column about it in, I think it was 2002 spring training. And so I played with Dave Hollins, whose AKA nickname is Headley, for his kind of large head and switch hitter, real powerful, strong guy, always straight face, had, you know, scruffy guy, looked like he could lift a car if he wanted to in the off season. But apparently Dave Hollins at his apartment got bit by a spider. And you know, I did a little more research on it. The spider was called a brown recluse. And for those of you Dungeons and Dragons fans out there, it uses a necrotic venom. So for those of you who play Dungeons and Dragons, you could be a necromancer, which is sort of like an evil wizard, and where you can steal health points as you take them, as you gain them by, you know, doing all kinds of wizardry type of moves. So Dave Hollins became a necromancer apparently, and but I'll tell you, this thing was crazy because he got bit by a spider, and I mean this put him out for weeks and maybe months even. He was still affected by it. He just got the worst of the venom. And you know, Dave was diabetic, so there's a lot of stuff going on. So he had to get his knees drained. Nothing was really working. So, of course, you know, the way we are in our sympathetic ways, we decided to do a column dedicated to Spider-Man. And since the movie is one of the top grossing movies, I think it is the top grossing movie currently out of about $700 million. Yeah, I think it's fitting that we bring this back full circle, as the other time Spider-Man came out, that's when Dave Hollins got bit by a spider. So brown recluse, if you ever see one, Peter Parker, it's a lie. Peter Parker, you don't become Spider-Man. you get swollen knees and bad joints. It's not a good thing.
You don't become Peter Parker. You become Dave Hollins. That's quite
yeah,
a
become
fun.
Dave Hollins. Yeah.
Yeah. I actually got bit by a spider 1 year during spring training too in Florida, and my whole arm blew up. My elbow. Ooh. Like my arm was in a sling for a week.
Oh my goodness. Wow. I missed that. Wow.
Yeah, that's not that long ago. So I don't recommend it either, but it was just hard not to get into the recluse spider portion of the show when we had that opportunity. So now, moving along, at the end of every year, Doug, as you know, I write my ever popular Strange But True Feats of the Year column. This year, we had a lockout going on, so I wrote three columns. And in part three, I included my own favorite injuries of the year in 2021. But today, Doug, because the kind of guy I am, I'm going to give you a chance to rank your top three. So yes. Why don't we do it this way, all right? I gave you my whole list. You narrowed it down to three. Yes. I'll read those three in the order that I rank them. Mm-hmm. Then you can tell me how they really should be ranked. That work mm-hmm. for you?
That works.
Okay. All right. First, I had this classic, Zach Plesac of, what do we call him? The Guardians. He wasn't the Guardians at the time, but whatever. Zach Plesac, according to his manager, Terry Francona, friend of this pod, he was in the midst of aggressively ripping off his shirt. That's a quote. And that didn't go well. He got his thumb caught in a chair. He fractured the thumb. He spent the next month and a half on the injured list because he had issues removing his shirt, Doug. I thought that was spectacular in the injury of the year competition. Next, this is a good one too. I don't remember exactly how superstitious you were, Doug, but J.D. Martinez of the Red Sox, you know, mostly DHs, doesn't get to trot from the dugout out to the outfield. But all right, last game of the regular season, J.D. Martinez is playing right for the Red Sox. So on his way from the dugout to right field, he had a superstition thing that he always did. I wonder if he'll do it in the future. He steps on second base for luck. That went well. He tripped over the second base bag. He twisted his ankle. He missed the wild card game, Doug. The whole season came down to it. So it's a real indictment of superstition in my mind.
Oh,
okay.
It is.
And then your third favorite, Byron Buxton. Now Byron Buxton, mega talented player, but he's also known for all the crazy stuff that happens to him and keeps him off the field. This is his all-timer. He was eating a steak and cracked his tooth and needed a root canal. Okay, so those are the three. Zach Plesac's shirt mishap, J.D. Martinez's superstition glitch, and Byron Buxton. The food fought back. The steak fought back. How would you rank them, Doug?
Well, I took some notes here, and I'm
oh, I bet
I'm going to change the order just a little bit. I like it. I like where you're going. I put J.D. Martinez in the number. Well, should I do it backwards? Yeah, I'm going to do it. I'm going to go top down. I'm going to put J.D. Martinez in the number one slot. And this is because of the timing. This was the playoff implications. This is a stationary object that hasn't gone anywhere in approximately 179 years. Second base has been there. And in a superstition moment, you're not allowed to get hurt in superstition. I know people sleep with their bats, and if you knock out a tooth rolling off, then okay, you know, that's the problem with your superstition. You should be doubly charged if your superstition then hurts you. Okay, so I'm going to go with J.D. Martinez atop the list. But your 2-3, I kind of like where I'm going to stick with your list. Buxton, definitely, when the steak bites back, you have to go down in flames on this and be at least in the top three. Clearly, if he put some A1 sauce on it, it might have made it slippery, a little more slippery, and might have been able to avoid his tooth getting stuck in there. I don't know what his dental situation is, but we gotta put that high up there. You know, you're just eating the steak. You're supposed to celebrate, and then you end up with half your jaw left in the steak. I don't know, hopefully, as a lifetime gift card to that steakhouse, because they owe him quite a bit.
Smith Walensky in Buxton.
Yeah. Just put his name up there now. Just Buxton. Throw it up there. And I'm gonna go with Plesac as number three. I mean, just thinking of Terry Francona, that was clearly a wardrobe malfunction. I blame the shirt more than anything else, and maybe he didn't know where he was. But shirts should be just rippable in any sport because you're frustrated. You should be able to rip it off. They need to redesign these shirts to make sure that they're like, you know, sort of like when you're playing basketball and you could just rip off your sweatpants and they just pop. That's how clothes should be in Major League Baseball for all the frustration, so that you don't have this issue where you get stuck in your own shirt and then break your thumb. So I'm going to give a little hall pass and drop him to the number three slot. Now, honorable mention, Keith Hernandez, who was pruning his tree when I guess he stepped on his hot tub, slipped, and messed up his toe. Yep. But that's an announcer, so, you know, it's a little different category. So, yeah.
Doug, we got to wrap this show up, but I just looking at your face, you still got that brown recluse spider on your mind.
Yes.
All right. So what do you have to say? Go ahead.
Well, I just want to warn the audience so that you know when you see a brown recluse that you should run the other way. So for those of you, if you see that it has six eyes instead of eight, because brown recluses have six eyes, that's a clue. So of course you'd have to get close enough to see that. And then I wish you well. So six eyes. It's also known as the fiddleback spider, the brown fiddler, and of course, the violin spider because of the shape of its sort of body. So just some tidbits just so you know what you're looking at and you don't end up on the, well, I guess now it's called the injured list, back then the DL, but now the IL. You don't want to end up on the IL and because of a spider bite or something even more nefarious, one that has necrotic venom. So I wish Dave Hollins well. Hope you're listening and thank you for your time.
So if you see a brown recluse, become a recluse. That's what I take away.
Yes, good idea.
Okay, that's going to do it for this week's show. We will be bringing you more of this podcast magic all off-season long on The Athletic Baseball Show, which is available in its entirety, absolutely free, at Apple, Spotify, everywhere you get your podcasts. If you'd like to read our work or any of the incredible writing on our site, there is still no better sports writing being done anywhere than in The Athletic. So if you've thought about subscribing, just go to theathletic.com/baseballshow. And if you're a new subscriber, you can subscribe for 1/3 off. Try it. You will like it. Also, remember, you too can be part of this podcast because every show we invite the listener who submits the most fun trivia question of the week to join us right here and prove once again, there is almost no baseball trivia question we can't get wrong. Now, if you would like to submit one of those trivia questions, you could always email us at starkville@theathletic.com, or there's the other option, firing the questions at us on Twitter. To fire away at Doug Glanville. How does that work, Doug?
Absolutely. Well, it's just my name, at Doug Glanville, DougGlanville. Pretty easy.
I'm very similar, but I don't get the whole name in there. I am at Jason, StJaysonst. Please remember to hashtag the questions, #StarkvilleQS. So, Doug, thanks for playing. Thanks to Charlie Manuel for enlightening us and entertaining us. Thanks to Howard Goldberg for the great trivia question. Thanks to the acting mayor of Starkville, Cameron Molina, for producing us and putting up with us. And thanks to you all for listening. Coming up Wednesday on The Athletic Baseball Show, it's Evan Drellick getting us up to speed on The Lockout on his new Business of Baseball pod. And Doug and I will see you soon on Starkville.